Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We're going to tie some things together, and we're going to actually tie more things together when I'm kind of done with this next wave of content. We're kind of in the middle of what I call a wave of content. Content is the actual words of Madison, of Jefferson, of the framers. And so when we do the content, I actually read those words. I do not want you to take my word for it. I don't want you to, you know, listen to me editorialize and say, well, that's what they said. No, that's what I was saying that they said. And so what we want you to do, we want you to hear these words. We want you to hear exactly how Madison described this stuff. And so it kind of let's take a real quick look. Where have we been? Well, we kind of covered the ratification debates, got into some marketing, and then we got back into the wave of content. And the wave of content started with the Assumption Act. The Assumption Act was really the first course of action in the very first year of Congress. The federal government, by the charge of Alexander Hamilton, who was not an elected official. I don't know if he, you know, took the oath of office. I'm not sure because he wasn't elected. I think nowadays we do that. And I think back maybe in those days, I think anybody, even the janitor or, you know, the guy that was building the building took an oath, you know, to support the Constitution because they were pretty serious about honor and integrity and so forth. And they didn't just take, you know, for granted, oh, that's a good guy. We don't have to worry about swearing him in. It was done. And nobody took an insult to it. And so it was you know, perfunctory. Okay, so anyway, as we got into the Assumption Act, we realized and we opened this huge portal so that we could see that the federal government, in the concept of taking on debt that had nothing to do with the enumerated powers, was an outright violation. And it violated the Constitution specifically in a few ways because, one, it didn't have the enumerated power to take on state debt, nor did it have the ability to treat one state differently than another. It was violating the uniformity clause. And so from that point on, the paradigm had been incorrectly shifted. And at that point, it was a kind of a one-time thing that they were doing. And the reason why Hamilton, I understand why Hamilton was doing it, and I understand his justification. You know, what does a young couple that just gets married do about debt or credit? How do they get good credit? Well, they have to take on debt. If you don't take on debt, now some people say, well, you don't have to, but if you want to go out and buy a house, you have to have some kind of credit history. You have to prove that you pay your bills and those types of things. And so Hamilton was trying to establish a good credit record. And I think the best thing we could have done was paid off the debt that they actually had for, you know, the. And as they broke it out in the Assumptions Act, you could see that there were bonds that were out there. There was direct debt that was owed to foreign nations as well as other entities. And they kind of, you know, identified the different types of entities that may have had floating debt. And it was different between the states and how the states managed their debt. And the concept of bringing all that in was just like, are you kidding? So what really was going on was this was a one-time thing, but what has happened is it wanted to justify creating a bank, and it has punched a hole in the Constitution. And so because the federal government had got away with it, that means it's legitimate now, right? No. Fact of the matter is, as Madison points out many times later on in his life, that at any point in time, the states can step in and say, you know what? We understand how you defined the Constitution and the ratification of AIDS. That's not how you defined it. We're not going to let you interpret it that way anymore. You're violating our Constitution. You're running us into the ground with debt. You're doing all of these bad things, and shame on you. That was a slap of the hand. And so the Assumption Act was kind of like this, wow, right out the gate, Hamilton is up to no good. Now, then we got into the cod fishery bounties. And now, so the cod fishery bounties actually gives you a glimpse of something that occurred before the Constitution. And if you actually understand Madison's, the Memorial and Remonstrance Against Religious Assessments in Virginia. Now, I believe this was somewhere around 1787, 86, 85. It was right before the Constitutional Convention. And the real drive behind this, because you got to understand, each state had its own sponsored religion. And so Madison, what he was really upset and what really got his ire at the very beginning was he was noticing that he wasn't Baptist. It wasn't like it was his faith that was being incarcerated, but he saw that the Anglican Church would arrest Baptists for going out and trying to proselyte and basically teaching the word and sharing the gospel with other people that they didn't have a license from the Anglican Church to do so in the state of Virginia. They had this law. And Madison saw that as a, you know, just huge problem. And so I've never really read the Madison's Remonstrance on Religion and Remonstrance, our argument on religion or argument against religion. And so if you read this, it really helps you understand, you know, what the real driver is. And so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to read the very, very beginning of the Remonstrance or the Remonstrance Against Religious Assessments. But I've got these things that, you know, I call them the obligatories. This show is also sponsored by republicreview.org. This is the only show that gives you the facts. I read the words myself. Now, I ask you to, as a matter of fact, I'll even take this new bend here. If you would like to read these documents and record them, and then I'll help you edit them and everything else just to make my life easier. And you're a better reader than me. You can, you know, you flow and you understand, or just sometimes these words will throw me off because what is that we're doing there? Just like the other day. And so if you'd like to participate, I'm all for audience participation. And as a matter of fact, I haven't done it yet, but I've asked, and I will be asking some of the people that we will be partnering with the National Liberty Alliance, the Constitution Party, and so forth, that I hope to party with, to ally with, and you know, work together with these unifying groups. What I'm hoping to do is have some of them kind of help so that they can kind of do the readings. It just makes my life a little easier, because then all I've got to do is kind of play it, and then I can pause and I can editorialize that way. And so as I read along with it, but what we want to make sure is we're reading the precise words that these men said, or the precise words that were captured, because that's sometimes the best we can get. And in the debates and in other legal proceedings, just like Madison was making his argument against the cod fishery bounties, that was captured in the minutes of Congress. It's not like Madison sat down and wrote this. This was a debate that went back and forth, and we read from the record. And so that's what you have to go by. That's what we've had to go by for years and years. And believe it or not, those are legal documents. When somebody is up there bearing testimony, when somebody is bearing witness to something, that's a legal document. And this is why these guys were living under an oath. Anyway, as you know, we have a comment line, 425-270-5416. And we would appeal to you. We beseech you to help grow this message, help grow this out to more people. I believe that as you become more educated, people are going to actually be listening to you. They're going to be looking at you and go, how do you learn this stuff? you know, it doesn't take much time. And I tell people, if you just download the, you know, our this radio show and just listen while you're driving at your convenience, getting these contents. I mean, if it's a marketing day, you know, I'll connect dots for you. I'll prove that, you know, it's getting worse, and it's only going to get worse if you do nothing. So why don't you start doing something and start sharing and go, man, you got to listen to this. But because I'm telling you, this stuff is gold, and it has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with the authors, these framers, these men who created this system. I'm just the person that kind of saw the forest through the trees of what they did and actually how the Lord designed and instituted it. Because clearly, every single framer attested to the fact that they were driven by the inspiration of the divine hand of providence, that this Constitution was bestowed upon us from Him, our, the great beneficent, the creator of all. And so, why is it that we wouldn't want to read these things? As I like to refer to it, these are the words of the framer speaking to us from the dust. Why would we ignore these words? Why is it that the education system hides these words? And why is it that the legal system for the entire life of the Supreme Court buried the words of the ratification debates? Well, we'll get into that when we come back, and then I'll breathe the remonstrance, and then we'll start tying some more things together, because I told you we're tying it together today and giving you some content as well. But we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me, AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so finishing up the obligatories, I just want you to understand that as we kind of go through this, it takes time, right? If you've ever, you know, have you ever filled sandbags during a flood? Man, it's a lot of hard work, and you can't stop because the water's rising. Well, what happens if you, during good weather, go out there and fill sandbags, and you have, because you've moved into an area that is prone for flooding? Wow, people would look at you and go, man, you must be a prophet. You had those sandbags already filled. Not really. It's just that, you know, why put off and not have to worry about trying to get something done when it could be almost be impossible to do so? So you have to at least
have some fundamental basis if you're going to help lead. Now, we need supporters. Absolutely, we need supporters. So if you just want to support, that's great. Then there's ways you can support. By word of mouth, getting out there, you still have to have a little understanding of what we're talking about, what we're doing. But there's, those who actually support by, putting on events, if you are in an area and you have a lot of conservatives or even just a few, if you want to have a virtual meeting, you want to have a presentation with, with yours truly, or an event, we're getting other people to be able to do this. But what we want is you to do this. But if you're not, you can't do it now, but you want to get it going, then by all means, contact us. Let us know. We'll do a virtual meeting, like a town hall or what have you, and let people know that they're probably going to want to spend some time, because we're going to be talking about things that they've been wanting to talk about for a long time, that they never even knew they wanted to talk about these things. Because we're going to expose stuff to them, like the problems with the party. How do you, take back at your, grassroots level, at your local level? How do you take back your politicians? And we're going to show you how to do that. We can tell you how to do that. But more importantly, why is it that we need to do that? And for what is the purpose? In other words, we need politicians to be just like ICBMs, with very precise guidance that they're going to go in and they're going to do very specific things. We don't need these, these old archaic bombs that you drop and maybe you hit the target, or unfortunately, we have these things called collateral damage, where all sorts of civilians, women, children, and people that should not have been killed are dead. We don't want that. What we want is we want to be precise, on target, on spot. So anyway, you're more than welcome to getting involved. Give it some prayer. Give it some thought. I mean, if you go as far as fasting and praying to seek guidance like they did in the early days of this nation, do that. Take a little time and take it to the Lord. What can I do, Lord? How can I help? How can I get involved? Show me what I need to do. And so with that, I think we can kind of start tying some things together. Okay, so what we just did with the cod fishery bounties is I proved to you that Madison used some shock value. He basically said, hey, if we allow the federal government to say, based on their discretion, what that general welfare and defense, or the general defense and welfare clause preamble means, and redefine it as it was defined already during the ratification debates, and try to get away with redefining it, and then, because that's what they did. That's how we've got them teaching godless secular religion, this immorality, this critical race theory, all of these things that the education system is pouring down the throats of our future generations, and the damage that they're doing in so doing. It's all one unconstitutional. They don't have the power to do that. That was Madison's point, that they don't have the power. It's not an enumerated power. And so he basically said, hey, if you start going down this path, the consequences will be dire. And he basically said exactly what they're doing now. They've created churches. They've created a godless secular church. The federal government basically is going around saying, thou shalt not put thy God before us. And that's what they're doing. They're shutting down your prayer. They're shutting down this last COVID exercise in taking away your religious freedom and so forth. So in looking at this remonstrance, so this was kind of like the first shot across the bow at the state level in Virginia, where Madison, was becoming very alarmed at this marriage between government and religion. Now, let me be very clear. The marriage between government and a specific, an established faith denomination religion. Now, Can states, because if you look at the, if you go to the macro view, can a state actually have a symbiotic relationship with churches? Absolutely. Then it is no longer using force to support the one church it chose and allows the freedom of the individuals to be able to participate and benefit through that relationship between the state and churches. But anyway, this is how this goes. I'm just going to read the first paragraph plus. To the Honorable and General Assembly of the Commonwealth of Virginia, a memorial and remonstrance. We, the subscribers, citizens of the said Commonwealth, having taken into serious consideration a bill printed by order of the last session of General Assembly entitled, quote, "A Bill Establishing a Provision for Teachers of the Christian Religion," close quote, and conceiving that the same, if finally armed with the sanctions of law, will be dangerous abuse of power. Now, I'm going to stop right there and think, regardless of whether it's the Christian religion or godless secular religion, conceiving that the same, if finally armed with the sanctions of law, will be dangerous abuses of power, are bound as faithful members of a free state to remonstrate against it and to declare the reasons by which we are determined. We remonstrate against the said bill, and then they go down these, you know, paragraphs of arguments. Now, remonstrance means argue against, right? Okay, so the first thing is what I want to share. Because we hold it for a fundamental and undeniable truth, quote, that religion or the duty which we owe to our Creator and the manner of discharging it can be directed only by reason and conviction, not by force or violence, close quote. And that citation came from the Virginia Declaration of Rights, Article 16. Now, again, Madison worked with Mason on that. This was kind of where Madison was cutting his teeth as a state legislator when they created the Virginia Declaration of Rights. The religion then of every man, this is going on, this is what there's the argument. The religion then of every man must be left to the conviction and conscience of every man. And it is the right of every man to exercise it as these may dictate. In other words, these, his conscience and conviction. This right is in its nature an unalienable right. It is unalienable because the opinions of men, depending only on the evidence contemplated by their own minds, cannot follow the dictates of other men. It is unalienable also because what is here a right towards men is a duty towards the Creator. It is the duty of every man to render to the Creator such homage and such only as he believes to be acceptable to him. Now see, the godless secularists, these evil people in the 1800s, they were saying, hey, you're forcing us, you know, because of these ties and so forth, because of this monopoly that this one church has in the state, you're forcing us to bow to that church. Now, what would have happened had the state then said, you know what, if you want to establish a church, you know, we're going to make it so that we can have a free market on Christianity. But we're not going to allow certain churches or certain faiths, Mohammedan or what have you, because they did. They banned those things for well over a century. And so, and the Jews, even in the 1800s, many states were banning the Jews. I mean, Massachusetts didn't allow them, the Jews, to openly practice till like 1833. So the fact is that these states, you know, could have gone towards a freedom of Christian religion to allow other competing religions to be able to speak, teach, and help in the community with the states, with a relationship with the state. Because the state was already giving to one church, you know, the taxes and the money and or resources so that that church could help, you know, educate, help, you know, employ, help prepare people for employment. I mean, if you look at compassionate services, You know, if you're starving, they come in and feed you. Well, that's what the churches were doing back then. But the one church, it happened to be, the one church that was the established church of each state, had the advantage. And so they created these laws that started protecting them and creating a monopoly and so forth and so on. And had the states actually, I'm just giving you, you know, the armchair quarterbacking, had the states just backed out and said, you know what, we don't want to get away from this. The people need compassionate services, and we believe it is best that the churches and communities do this. So we want to create and we want to promote a mechanism so that the so all churches and all communities can benefit from, you know, the Christian faiths that are out there, along with the state, you know, monies, resources that we have to allow for that. Anyway, we will be right back moving into Madison's essay on property right after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so all the way over here where I'm sitting, I've heard those of you kind of go, huh, secularism, a church? Come on. I am telling you that if you understand what a church is, you can create a church. Look at L. Ron Hubbard with Dianetics. You can create a church, but what is a church? A church has doctrine and beliefs. Well, there's no such thing as a belief in secularism. Absolutely there is. And I'll give you some, you know, contrast between basic Christianity and secularism. Just right there at the very top, when they started creating the secular church here in America, the Antichrist church here in America, it was through the Scopes trial, right? 1920. The monkey trial, where bottom line, the government dictated that we evolved and that that would be what would be taught in school. It was first to be allowed to be taught, and then it was dictated that that is the only thing that can be taught. Force. Government using force to teach the dictates to men on religious matters. How is this a religious matter? Well, does evolution contradict creation? Yes, it diametrically opposes creation. And as a matter of fact, at the time, the way they were looking at evidence, they said there's better evidence of evolution than we have any evidence of creation. Well, actually, with technology and science, science has now turned the tables, and we have more evidence of creation than any possible explanation for evolution at all. I mean, things do evolve. Families evolve. A person evolves. Ideas evolve. But the concept that life evolved on the planet Earth is so remotely, it is so impossible that it shouldn't even be taught in school anymore. But it is still being taught as basic scientific law. Another comparison between Christianity and secularism, keeping the Sabbath day holy. There is no such thing as a Sabbath day. Have no other gods before me. There is no God. You start to see how when you start accepting the big lie of creation, then there is no God. Idols are okay. Idols are good. There's nothing wrong with, you know, worshiping whatever it is you want, loving whatever it is you want. Do not take the Lord's, yeah, just going down the commandments, right? Or we could even go down this concept of infanticide is murder. Abortion is the best choice. Secularism believes, you know, choice is better. Letting women choose, it's their body, not recognizing the life. These are diametrically opposed. I'll call them, it's not doctrine. These are beliefs that people attune to. These become the, as Madison was calling it, the conviction. And so when you actually get to a point in your life to where you have this, what we'll call these, the conviction, and there was another word for it, the manner of discharging the creator, conscience and conviction. In other words, what we believed and what we thought. And so when you start looking at this, stealing is okay, or even better yet, when you start looking at sexual orientation today in the school system. You know, we were taught that, you know, there is a, you know, a divine role for a man and a woman, and that we, you know, have procreation and so forth. That is very well stipulated within the Christian faith across all of them. But now in school, kids are being taught, you know, you are whatever it is you think you are. Whatever you want to qualify yourself as and be. And so go out and experiment. This is what the schools are now beginning to teach your children. And it's happening in a few states. If it's not happening in your state, don't worry. It will be very soon. Your teachers are actually telling your children, in, you know, or I should say your children's teachers in private are telling your children it is okay to experiment. Play around with each other. Play around with yourself. Play around with animals. It's okay. Experiment. And then once you've, you know, experimented enough, then figure out what you really like. And that helps you determine your orientation. Do you understand the danger and the evil of this godless secular church that has been created? They don't have a Sunday school like your Christian faith. They have a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday school. And how is it that your Sunday school is going to counter the 8 hours a day of indoctrination that their Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday school is going to do? I mean, it just can't. So the reason I started going down this, and this is a part of an article that I've been meaning to actually publish and get out. It's basically my argument or the remonstrance of the establishment of the secular church in the United States and how this, how we morphed or how we slowly went from one, you know, what was considered kind of an extreme. But I want you to, I want to point something out. Back in those days when, you know, they were, you know, going down this path of kind of breaking walls and freeing things, that was the Age of Enlightenment. But how quickly did the godless, evil, secularist communists quickly come over, grab the bricks of the walls that we broke down or that our framers broke down, grab those and started building their own walls with those bricks? And now they have these fortresses that they are dictating to us. Well, just so you understand, They can't do it. They're doing it because we are allowing them. This is a house of cards they're living in. All we need to do is blow it down. And we only need a few thousand. I don't need a million. We only need a few thousand people to blow this house of cards down. It's that powerful, this concept of republic review, because your state legislatures possess that authority. Anyway, like I said, we're going to be tying a lot of this together. And so when we get there, we will. But more importantly, let me get into this concept of property now, because I want you to understand how and why I'm tying this. Because when Madison boils it down, what is your most valuable property? It's not your house. It's not your cars. It's not this great collection of whatever. It is your thoughts, your ideas, your religious beliefs and convictions. And so this is what he said. This was done 29 March 1792. And just actually, let me set the stage on this too, because property actually has a historical legal context down two separate legal systems. And I'm saying this because I had a pretty interesting conversation with some good friends that are a part of the Constitution Party, and they didn't understand the context of common law and civil law historically. That common law goes back to, you know, ancient Bible days, that people have a right of justice. You know, you have a right to have, you know, a judge, because, I mean, Moses set that up in Israel, but it even went back before that. When somebody was wronged, they had a right to justice. And in those days, it was a theological, governmental type of right. And that slowly evolved, and it was embraced in the British common law system. Now, civil law or godless law was, what's the best way to say this? It was instituted by Rome. It was interesting, and if you understand history and the history of property and property law, they point to civil law, because they say civil law is where it was documented, where it was galvanized first in writing that property is severable. In other words, if you earned something, you did an exchange, you gave wampums for Manhattan, and now you build a fence. There was a legal transaction. Manhattan's now yours. And so you build up your fence around Manhattan, and you protect your property because you paid for that. It's severable. You took it from, you didn't take it. You did a exchange, a free market exchange, where two willing people traded. Now, that's just one example or a bad example. If you're walking along and you actually come across a tree and an apple falls and it's down upon the ground, is that your apple or is that the property owner's apple? Well, some people would say, well, in civil law, they actually allowed that to become, you know, common property until they started creating the boundaries of this, or the several boundaries, because sometimes there were things in common areas. Well, bottom line, they started documenting exactly how property was to be owned and, you know, transferred and those types of things in Rome. Well, guess what? Let's see here. Was it 1,000 years before when Moses wrote the Ten Commandments? It was clear even before the Ten Commandments that thou shalt not steal. What does that mean? That means that you cannot take property that belongs to someone else. Oh, isn't that interesting? It was actually written down thousands of years or more before the Roman legal system started creating several law and property law. Interesting, isn't it? Well, no, they don't want you to look at things in that manner. It's the same thing with slavery. They don't want you to know that America and Israel were the only two nations that were freed and sanctified by God. As far as slavery goes, they don't want you to make that correlation. But anyway, we'll be right back after these two promos.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so make no mistake, because actually I played that interview just a few weeks back with Brent Winters regarding common law and civil law. Now, in America, in the very beginning of the Constitution, before the Bill of Rights, states had a freedom to choose whatever law it chose to, you know, recognize as the law of the land. And so every state in the Union at the time of the Constitution had common law, every state. Now, and I think New York, when it was New Amsterdam, was actually civil law. And it, when it was taken over by the the infiltration of the English colonists that got into New York, and then it basically became an English colony, that's when it became common law. Every state in the Union had the freedom based on the original Constitution without the Bill of Rights. When the Bill of Rights was ratified, the federal government recognized that states had the right of, and actually, it bestowed upon them, you know, this, not just a right, an inalienable right of common law. Because if you read, every person, when they're going into a federal court on suits under common law, they have these rights. So this is where the Constitution actually set in stone that the law of the land would be in at least including, if not isolated or exclusive to, common law. At that point in time, states had the freedom because the Bill of Rights only applied to the federal government. It was protections. You know, we as people and states were protected from the federal government in these very specific cases of, you know, right of religious expression, assembly, petitioning government, to these things. And if you read the preamble, which we've done many times, but go read the preamble to the Bill of Rights. These were extra constraints placed upon the federal government, not state. Okay, so how did common law really become a constitutional dictate to states? It was through the 14th Amendment.
because the 14th Amendment then applied the same protections to the people from the states because of the freemen. After the Civil War, the freemen were then free to do whatever. They had these rights. Well, states didn't have to give them these rights because the Bill of Rights didn't apply to the states. So states could take away your right to bear arms, your right to assemble, your right, you know, to freedom of speech, and all of these different rights that the southern states were directly denying the freemen. This is why that was one of the fastest amendments that was ever produced and put out. I mean, it was just a matter of months. If you look at the magnitude, I have 263 pages. They focused on this very specifically and, you know, got this done. And why did they get it done? Because they knew that the Civil Rights Act, which they passed just a month or two before, had no teeth, because an act only has legitimacy, only has teeth in D.C. and in the territories that are, you know, owned and operated by the federal government. Well, states aren't territories. States are sovereign states. So the only way they could apply this new law as the law of the land was through an amendment. So in the 14th Amendment, it actually applied common law so that now we have these same property rights in the Constitution as the states and the people had, you know, against the states as we had against the federal government in protecting ourselves against their oppression. Well, this is why constitutional literacy is just running amok and it's killing us. But anyway, so let me get into James Madison's essay on property. Because he's going to hit this ball, and he's going to square it off, and he's going to not just hit it out of the park. If you stand around long enough, that ball will come right back around, and you'll just see it looping, because that baby is in orbit. It is a never-ending. Once you get this, it is a paradigm shift. This in the term, this is Madison now, James Madison on property. This term, and we're not going to be able to finish this, so this will bleed into the next episode. So you're going to have to tune in to get all of this. This term, in its particular application, means, quote, that dominion which one man claims and exercises over the external things of the world in exclusion of every other individual. This particular thing, the term he's talking about is property. In its larger and juster meaning, it embraces everything to which a man may attach a value and have a right, and which leaves to everyone else the like advantage. In the former sense, a man's land or merchandise or money. Now, I've got you to get this. They want to take away money. They want to go to a cashless society. In so doing, they are taking your property. It will no longer be your property. In the former sense, a man's land or merchandise or money is called his property. In the latter sense, a man has a property in his opinions and the free communication of them. He has a property of a peculiar value in his religious opinions and in the profession and practice dictated by them. He has a property very dear to him in the safe and liberty of his person. He has an equal property in the free use of his faculties and free choice of the objects on which to employ them. In a word, and this is the most profound, at least you're going to get this today, and we're going to repeat this in our next episode because we'll have to start off with this. I got 4 minutes left, but we're going to come back around because this is that profound. He says this, in a word, as a man is said to have a right to his property, he may be equally said to have a property in his rights. So, as we told you, when they were doing this COVID, taking away your ability to work and engage in commerce. You have a right to commerce in America. That is a fundamental and inalienable right to go get a job, to be able to go and acquire things, to grow food, to sell food, to, you know, to do exchanges, and to have a free market of exchange. We don't have a free market anymore. We already know we've got a mercantile system, but you have a right to be able to do that. And when government took that away, they didn't just take away your right, they took away the property. That is your property. When they take something that you should be able to do, that's an inalienable right of religious expression, it's the same thing as they stole your car. It's the same thing as they stole your home. And as we go through this, you're going to see which property is truly our most valuable. Where an excess of power prevails, property of no sort is duly respected. No man is safe in his opinions, his person, his faculties, or his possessions. I'm going to read that again because that's what happened last year. Where an excess of power prevails, property of no sort is duly respected. No man is safe in his opinions, his person, his faculties, or his possessions. Now, I'm going to tell you something. We have constitutional rights that protect us from government being able to suspend. As a matter of fact, that's what the 14th Amendment basically says, that the states cannot make or enforce any law that takes away our privileges and immunities guaranteed by the Constitution. That's guaranteed to every U.S. citizen. Now, I just want you to understand the magnitude of what's happened, because when they created these emergency powers laws for states, because of a disease or because of a flood or because of something like that, they can basically suspend all laws. No, they can't, because the Constitution and the 14th Amendment says that they can make, there's no exception in that amendment. There's no, they can't create or enforce any laws that abridges your immunities and privileges guaranteed by the Constitution, except in case of emergency. No, they didn't put that except. In other words, the states have no authority to do this. They cannot take away your right of religious expression and going and worshiping. And so if you've never read my article on Reclaiming the Republic, Martial Law in the 21st Century, that's the article you want to read to understand what a state constitutionally can do if we have an outbreak, a pandemic, or what have you. What they can do, they cannot take away the rights of everybody, but they can protect people from harm. And so how do they protect people from harm? If you're sick, that person can cause harm. And so the sick people can be quarantined. They can be removed for whatever purpose. And, you know, a lot of people don't like that power, but look at the reverse of what they did. They took away everybody's rights. Now, they do have a right. And if you look at the Constitution in the states have a right, but there may not be constitutional. To be honest, this is why we have to review, we have to audit these constitutions. We will be back into Madison's essay on property in our next episode. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.